As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Joelle Steiniger.
And I'm Matt Goldman. Today we talked with Ryan Negri, the co-founder of Lycos. What do you think?
This one was really interesting. He talked a lot about the lessons he learned at his previous company. And what impressed me with him was his foresight. So not only building a really strong foundation so that when the time does come to scale, he's ready, but even things like hiring. They start working on who they're going to bring onto the team months before that person's even needed, which is something that you don't hear a lot of.
Yeah, this is a great one. I love all the focus on foundation. It's, you know, he focuses on the things that you need to prepare early on to build a solid team. So let's get into it. We're so happy to have Customer.io supporting the show again. We use Customer.io for Hookfeed, and we absolutely love the power it gives us. Customer.io is a data-driven email platform that helps you communicate better with your customers. The kicker is that their powerful rules-based targeting enables you to keep your messages human, even as you automate them and scale. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert. So Ryan, tell us about your previous company, Negri Electronics.
So I founded Negri Electronics in 2006, actually from my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, from her apartment building. It was more, you know, I wanted to get into electronics. Electronics were a hot topic back in 2006, and I saw a need for a way to obtain smartphones. Back then, you know, they were just becoming known. There was a HP phones were coming out with touch screens, and I knew that, you know, that was going to be where everybody was going. Everybody would want one of these because I looked at it more. Some people looked at it just as an item they had in their pocket. I looked at it more of a kind of like a vehicle. Like when you drive around in a nice vehicle, you're proud of your vehicle, that sort of thing. And people would have that same feeling for their devices. Lucky for me, I was actually right. So I started in 2006 just buying and selling on eBay. And the point of using eBay, I knew it wasn't a viable option because of the fees. But it was for a great way for me to source products, source suppliers for products, and find customers. So my whole focus on eBay was actually to redirect traffic from eBay to my own site, which at the time only had, you know, 3 to 4 products on, whatever we could get our hands on. I say we, but it was just myself for 2006. I ended up doing quite well, I guess, in 2006. It was like 300,000 in sales for the entire year, which I thought was decent for, you know, just myself. Actually moved into a slightly larger facility than an apartment building, and hired a friend of mine to help with customer service and boxing phones. And I dealt with, you know, the supplier chain and larger customers that wanted more than one phone. We moved into that facility, and it started to get busy. I started to get the right suppliers. We started to import phones from different countries, and we were able to position that as, you know, one of the only distributors or only places in the United States to buy these hard-to-find, very expensive wireless devices. And the entire time I'm starting up this company, people are telling me I'm crazy. You know, nobody's ever going to pay $500 for a phone. You're nuts. They're giving them away for free at the carriers. But I saw something different. I saw a trend, and, you know, my whole outlook was everybody is going to have either one or two of these in the near future. And it just so happens, you know, prior to selling the company, I actually had 3 phones that were active at all times because I had the International, I had the BlackBerry, I had the iPhone. So again, I was right, but it was a hunch, you know? We grew steadily and slowly. It was all, you know, self-funded. I actually used 2 credit cards to initially buy most of the merchandise. One was a 5,000 credit limit, one was a 10. I started the company with $15,000. We never took outside funding. We didn't raise money at the time. You know, I was in Wisconsin. There's no VCs in Wisconsin. There's no talk of startups. So it was just another small business. And we did quite well. We grew very quickly. we got up to, I think we had 6 employees in Minocqua, Wisconsin. I believe it was 2008 or 9. I didn't want to remain in Wisconsin. I wanted to kind of expand and not only get out of the cold weather, but also, you know, find other opportunities for this company because, you know, being in Wisconsin, there's not a lot of Wisconsin customers, which was good from a sales tax perspective, but not a growing your business perspective. So I relocated myself to California and remotely managed the office in Wisconsin. I had a manager there. He was a younger gentleman with not a lot of managerial experience. So it was me really remotely managing most things with a remote warehouse. So we're able to ship from Wisconsin, which is relatively cheap. We had the best discounts in the entire state when it comes to shipping because we were one of their larger accounts at the time. So it actually worked out fairly well from a financial perspective, but we weren't growing as fast as we wanted to. So out in California, I was networking and working with other local distributors of the high-end products. We were able to expand relatively quickly that way because the more and better suppliers that you have, the better prices you can offer to the customers, the better supply, the variety of phones you take or you bring in. It just helps the customer. It helps you target to the right customer.
So one of the things that you did while you were working on that company is that you worked in a lot of different departments and really got an understanding of how the entire business works. Can you talk at all about, you know, the things that you did and what you pulled away from doing all the different variety?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when I started it myself, obviously I did everything. So I went you know, being the sales lead to the customer service to boxing. Like, I boxed my own phones for the first 3 years of my company. And, you know, that's basically saying, you know, the CEO is working in the warehouse. But, you know, when you're that young as a company and you don't have this financial backing or even the relationships to hire another CEO or another C-level position, you really have to do everything yourself. And I believe, and I strongly believe that has helped me gain far more experience than, you know, reading a book or a blog or following someone else growing their company. And it's the experience that actually helps you gain that knowledge a lot quicker, because you're doing everything. You know, I was literally doing everything. And that includes the accounting and the marketing. So I was very spread very thin. And one of the struggles, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs have the struggle, is the delegation process. And that's when to hand off a certain department or a certain responsibility to someone else. And I wasn't good at that because I was so strict on the fact that we had to be perfect, because the industry that we're in, the consumer electronics, is a very difficult industry. And starting up in 2006 with no track record, you have to build your trust from zero. And if you have one mistake, that turns into a negative review, which is on all over every internet blog, all over every review site, and they could essentially ruin your business that way. So it was, the delegation process was difficult for me to kind of master, I guess.
So now you're working on Lycos, which you're kind of working on multiple products under one roof. What are you taking with you from this experience to what you're doing now?
I guess the organization and managerial operational type skills that I've gained over the years helps kind of know where I made mistakes in my last company and know where not to make them in this one. And that has a lot to do with what my focus is right now, is building a strong foundation for the company. And I think that's, a lot of the times you see startups are 1 to 2 people and that's really all that they have. My goal is to surround myself with the best people possible. And that's anywhere from C-level to designers to engineers. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't focus on building a strong core, a strong foundation, and if you look at it like a building, right? So you're building a large skyscraper, and if you don't pay attention to your foundation, the capital or anything you put on top of it, it's going to collapse. So my duties right now are to make sure the foundation is strong and we have the right people in place. So when we need to take off at 100 miles an hour, we're not going to collapse.
So for the people that are trying to build that foundation now and get themselves okay with handing off certain pieces of the business and trusting other people to run it, what advice would you give to them?
I guess that's twofold. So let's talk about the foundation. I think it's easier to get people involved if you're passionate about what you're doing. And if it's something just to do, I really don't think that you're going to be able to get the right people. So you have to be passionate about it. It has to be an exciting project or company or an idea in order to get people to come on. And a lot of the times these people come on and you can't pay them. You can't afford to pay them. So you have to give them something that makes it worth their while. And that excitement and that passion that you're able to share with somebody else is what's really going to motivate them to not only be involved, but help you grow the company. And most of the time, like I said, for free or for stock options in a company that might not go anywhere.
How do you hand off pieces of the business to those people and get okay with delegating?
Yeah. So that's a huge thing to be able to do. So it's a lot of trust, and I don't want to say it's blind trust, because I want entrepreneurs to have the faith in the person they're actually delegating to. But sometimes you have to have that blind trust. Sometimes, you know, you bring in a partner, you bring in a co-founder, and it's like, here this is, you know, do the best that you can with it. I'm going to trust you, and because I need to focus on this. And I actually, you know, I'm very lucky as far as a co-founder goes, because Kyle's, he's an amazing co-founder. He's been involved in coding and programming before the iPhone even came out. And they were, you know, they were putting in, he was developing iPhone apps before they had the app store. So they had Cydia, which is the jailbreak app store. And he was developing apps before they were even, you know, popular and fun. But I got lucky, because I knew him, I knew Kyle for actually 12 years before we even decided to go into business together. And that's rare. And I see a lot of posts and a lot of questions on Quora about, you know, how do you find a co-founder? And for me, it was, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it took me a long time to build up a relationship and be able to completely trust a co-founder. So I guess, you know, the advice for delegation would be to, it's a short leash to start if you don't completely trust them. And that leash needs to be extended, and you need to revisit extending that leash very often, because it's going to be, if you build too much of the company on your own shoulders, it's harder and harder to offload that onto somebody else. So you need to constantly be giving more and more, I say leash, but it's more freedom or more comfortability with the delegation process.
Yeah, I see us doing the same thing. Like we put so much on our own shoulders, and it seems like it would be so taxing to take a piece off your plate and get someone else started on it. But just starting, even if it's in a small way, can be so helpful.
Right. Yeah. And some of the times, like some of the things that you want to delegate might actually take longer to explain than they would for you to just do. And that's the mindset that a lot of people get. It's like, you know, I'll just do it. But it's a repetitive task at most of the time. So it's actually worth sitting down and explaining and spending the hour that's going to take to say, listen, we need to do this every single week, and I don't have time, but I'm going to sit here and go through with you numerous times on how to do it, so then I can feel comfortable not doing it every week and making sure it's still going to get done.
So how does that apply to your current hiring situation? Is that how you identify roles that need to be hired on your team, when you just find someone doing something that they shouldn't be doing over and over? Or is there another indicator?
That's a really good question. I mean, with the hiring process, it's more what I think we're going to need in the future rather than what we need right now. I think we're set with what we need right now, and that's because I hire in advance all the time. I can, I don't want to say I see the future, obviously, but I can see that what we're going to be needing based on either the pipeline we have or the current workload. So that's something that I guess I would say I was pretty good at, and I take that experience back from Negri Electronics, of being able to hire quickly, efficiently, and in advance. And I think that's very important, because a lot of the times, you know, you've got a small operation and you don't really know what you need because you've never been there before. With me, I've been there before, so I kind of know what's going to be needed in 3 to 6 months. And that the hiring process shouldn't be, you know, a week. It should be over several months, because it's almost a marriage, because you're bringing somebody in that you're going to put all this faith into. You're going to spend all this time onboarding. You're going to issue them shares or stock options. You're going to go through the contract. So that takes a long time, and that's an investment. So, you know, why do that in a week? Why do that after one interview? Spend time, you know, getting to know the person, researching them. There's due diligence that both sides have to do in order for it to be successful. And I think a lot of people just overlook that and say, oh, this guy's really talented, just bring him in. They don't spend the time to actually get to know them and make sure that the values, the shared values are there. And, you know, it's like Tony Hsieh always says, it's more expensive to, okay, I want to go back. It's cheaper to fire and pay somebody to quit than it is to keep them on. And that's, you know, proven in his recent actions with Zappos. I mean, he paid a ton of people to quit because they didn't like the holacracy. And that, I mean, that's a good thing, because if they stuck around and did not like their workplace, they could bring the entire corporation, you know, the motivation of the entire corporation down, and that's hurtful. So it's an investment. It takes time, and it should not be done over, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. It's a month-long process to hire the right people.
Yeah, it's critical. Like, you know, one person on a 10-person team could totally change the dynamic of that team.
Absolutely. And you want to bring people in that can also train new people. So, you know, when you talk about values, you want them to be able to share and be open about their values to the next hire. And they need to have the shared values when they bring somebody else in. So if you train them correctly, it's such an easier job going forward than it is to go back and micromanage everybody, because you don't have the full faith or the full trust in them.
So for someone who's just getting started and, you know, doesn't have all this prepared, they're getting ready to make their first couple hires, and all of this sounds super daunting with, you know, having to have months of training and knowing what to teach these people and what to look for. What are the key things that they need to be looking out for?
I think that the one of the first things I would do even before hiring is make sure you have 1 to 2 advisors. I did not have that in my last company, so a lot of the times I made these mistakes and had to go back and correct myself, but made a mental note that, you know, don't do that again. But I think it's really important to kind of have people you can bounce ideas off of that are there's a mutual agreement that it's an advisorship, right? I had a lot of friends that I could talk to back in the day about, you know, what do I do in this situation? But none of them were vested enough, and none of them were had the experience of doing this in the past. So I think, you know, the first thing you would probably do is find 1 to 2 advisors that you know and trust and are willing to kind of spend some time with you so you can bounce ideas off them. But the hiring process, I mean, it's a pain point for every organization. I would say that, you know, do due diligence, do research as quickly and efficiently as possible on the prospective hire. Make sure you definitely check references and make sure those references aren't just, you know, just all friends or friends' companies they worked at. And really get to know the person. Go out to lunch. Go out to a coffee. You know, you're going to be checking their Facebook updates. You're going to be checking their Twitter. You want to do this and feel confident that you're hiring the right person. So I would say spend as much time learning about the prospective hire as possible, because this person's going to be working with you and a representative of you for a very long time, hopefully.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Can you let everyone know where they can keep up with you online?
Sure. Lycos.com. It's LAICOS. It's actually social, spelled backwards, .com. And or RyanNegri.com is my personal blog, and I update from time to time. Just recently had an update there about how Twitter and Facebook are listening in on your conversation, so it might be pretty interesting to check out.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today.